science. Quote, ours is the first study that shows the relationship between eating whole grains and the health benefits for older people whose metabolic characteristics may be different from younger adults, end quote. Metabolic syndrome, which is linked to increased risk of diabetes and cardiovascular disease, is increasing in the United States. It's estimated that 40% of men and 51% of women over 60 are affected with metabolic syndrome. In a group whose average age was 72 for men and 73 for women, the study found that subjects who daily consumed about 3 servings of whole grain, such as whole grain bread, cereal, and brown rice, had a lower prevalence of metabolic syndrome than people who ate less than 1 serving a day. The U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommends that all people consume 3 or more ounces, or the equivalent of whole grain products, a day. Whole grain products contain fiber, vitamins, minerals, and other things that are removed during refining, said Sahoyan. We recommend that whole grain, and this again is Sahoyan, intake should start from a very young age to develop a healthy lifestyle. Cardiovascular changes and diabetes risk are starting to occur earlier now, especially due to obesity, the obesity epidemic. Something to think about for our older populations. Okay, as I told you last week and earlier today, our guest is Immaculée Ilibagiza. Immaculée was born in Rwanda and studied electronic and mechanical engineering at the National University of Rwanda. Her life transformed dramatically in 1994 during the Rwanda genocide when she and 7 other women huddled silently together in a cramped bathroom of a local pastor's house for 91 days. During this horrific ordeal, Immaculée lost most of her family, but she survived to share the story and her miraculous transition into forgiveness and a profound relationship with God. 4 years later, she emerged from Rwanda to the United States and began working for the United Nations in New York City. She immigrated. She has since established the Left to Tell Charitable Fund to help others heal from the long-term effects of genocide and war. Immaculée, now 36, lives in Long Island with her husband and their 2 children. Left to Tell is Immaculée's first book. One thing I want to say that despite the events inspiring Immaculée's book, it is nonetheless a positive book about hope. Good morning, Immaculée. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Good morning.
And thank you for agreeing to do this. When your publicist suggested having you as a guest, and I thought yes, for sure, because, I mean, our program is about wellness, wholeness, and wisdom related to alternative medicine therapies and such. But the wisdom that you share about an alternative to hate, revenge, and anger during and after negative events like yours, it certainly falls within the purview of what our program is about.
Thank you for what you do. That's so nice to help people. Wow.
Well, thank you. To start out, could you share with us what your life was like as a child? Did you grow up in Rwanda and what that was like?
Yeah, that's right. I grew up in Rwanda in a small village called Mataba, around a lake, a huge lake. It seemed like a sea to me when I was growing up. So I grew up with my 3 brothers and my mom and dad. And, you know, and we had so many neighbors. Rwanda is a very populated country. Most populated maybe in Rwanda, in Africa. But it is a tiny country also, the size of Maryland, actually. Mm. Yeah. But we had about 8 million before the genocide. So when I was growing up, everything was good. I played with my neighbors. We had a good time. My parents were Catholic and they prayed a lot. So we talked about God, about good things were going on in the country, listening to news. But they never told us about the hatred that was going on between the 2 main tribes, Hutu and Tutsis. We played with everybody. We had Hutu and Tutsis coming to visit us every day. I felt really loved by everybody in the village. Nothing ever prepared me to what was coming. And, you know, Rwanda, again, is a really, like, you have a very nice weather. It is almost always spring. Mm. So I just grew up really having a good time, having flowers all around or throughout the year. It was a good life, as I remember it.
Well, now, before we get too much further into the interview, your name is so beautiful and so unique. Can you share some of the meaning behind your name?
That's right, Immaculée Bagiza. Another thing I want to say is that in Rwanda, everybody has a different last name in the family. So we don't take the names of the parents, like here. So the father would normally, after 7 days the child was born, will wake up in the morning as a tradition and give a name that comes from his heart to the child. It will always be the father who named the child, even if it's the mother who suggests the father what is the name.
Mm-hmm.
So Immaculée, like you understand it, is really immaculate. They named me after the Blessed Mother, Virgin Mary. Oh my, pure.
Right.
It was a great wish from my parents for me to be. And Ilibagiza means something beautiful in the body and soul, like mm-hmm. really shining. The really meaning of Ilibagiza in Kinyarwanda is this thing that is so beautiful that will make people forget about where they were going.
I think it's very important, the names we give our children, because they do, I think, have almost a predictive effect on how that child is going to develop and what they may accomplish in their life.
I think so, because when I was growing up, everybody was like, your dad named you that? He must love you so much.
Now we have... Yes, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he must love you so much. So it kind of reminds you of that. You know, you are loved. You know, somebody cared so much about you.
And you have something, an expectation, almost that you feel you must live up to. You know, it's got to be inspiring. Before we go to break, which we'll do in about 30 seconds, where exactly is Rwanda for those who are not familiar with the African continent?
That's right. Rwanda is located in central east part of Africa. It is near Congo. You know, those are the neighbors' country, Congo, Burundi, those who know Uganda. We are just 30 minutes away from Uganda, the capital, and Tanzania. So those who know Kenya, Nairobi, it is not far from them.
Okay, very good. Thank you. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. Our program is sponsored by Alternative Medicine Therapies. My main office is in the Tubala Plaza Building, Suite 300 in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. Visit our website at www.amtherapies.com or call the office at 610-687-6184. Stay tuned for our return with Immaculée Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, about her journey before, during, and after hiding with seven women in a small bathroom for 91 days in Rwanda.
Why should you passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments? It's time to take charge of your life with preventive measures. Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies at 610-660-7710 for an initial consultation. Alternative Medicine Therapies offers a holistic approach to preventive care, unlike conventional medicine that tries to correct the illness that exists instead of preventing it altogether. Don't let anyone tell you that your situation is hopeless. Alternative medicine therapies like iridology, kinesiology, reflexology, energy medicine, which includes Qi Li therapy, acupressure, and psychological consultations has an amazing track record of positive results. Why suffer when alternative medicine therapies with psychologist Parthenia Izzard is here to help? Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies today for an initial consultation at 610-660-7710 and visit their website at www.amtherapies.com. And don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izzard's radio program each Saturday morning at 8 on AM 860 WWDB.
Don't passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments. Listen to me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8 for Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom. I am a local natural healthcare practitioner and psychologist. I will show you alternative paths toward health with an holistic approach. Don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8, only on AM 860 WWDB. welcome back. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. Do visit our website to participate in my blog. That's one way I get your feedback. Today, we're talking with Immaculée Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, about her journey before, during, and after hiding with seven women in a small bathroom for 91 days. Immaculée, this is going to be such a challenge. I do not want to mess up your name at all. I'm breathing before I say it each time, and I'm very concerned about it, but so far, so good. I would like you to briefly tell us something about your life prior to the incidents that you share in your book.
My life before was...
What was going on, you know, that year before, I guess?
That year before. I was in university my last year doing mechanical engineering and electrical engineering. I mean, I was in university, of course, like all students, you know, having good time, forgetting, ignoring the world, and sometimes voicing the injustice that was going on. And the students, they didn't like at all what was going on in the country, because they felt, you know, like the people of my tribe, which they have, you know, I still feel so bad that they have made a big deal just between this little thing they called tribe. Mm-hmm. You couldn't find a school if you are Tutsi. It was so hard to find a job. And you look like, is it just a little thing they put in identity card, and they will put you are Tutsi, and another one is a Hutu.
Could you tell us, give us a little bit about the breakdown of the ethnic situation or the ethnic divide in Rwanda?
Yeah, you know, we have actually two main tribes. It is Tutsi and Hutu. And before that, they say that the Hutus were about 85% and Tutsis were 15%. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people, other people say it was also a way of making them minority, so they would take a lot of privileges from them. Mm-hmm. So if you go to school, they say they have 10 places in school, it was a law from the government that they have to accept one Tutsi and 9 Hutus, mm-hmm. even if you have passed the exam.
Wow.
Yeah, it was something like that. And the background of that, it really started by the time of colonialization in 1900, when the Belgians took over the country to colonize it. And they said they wanted to organize the country, and they divided people in two tribes. So I don't know what happened for whoever was there and caused these two tribes to almost fight together,
sure.
You know, like for power, mm-hmm. they would elect. And then they caused this kind of, you know, this brother thing, like jealousy, and it grew, it became so bad that then they would try now to kill the people of the other tribe so that they would never win over the power, like the election. So it was something, it started a long time like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1973, they had wars that they killed the main people from Tutsi tribe who have gone to school. So mm-hmm. what happened in 1994 was completely something new to eliminate everybody. Before, it was just like to target people who have gone to school, who have degrees, you know, just so they would not have competition.
Right.
And then it happened like that. Mm-hmm. So the year before the whole thing happened, we had this radio. I never forgot about it. People called it hate radio, but the name was RTLM. This radio, later I knew that it was sponsored by the president at that time, by the government, main people in the country. But they used to have these people they called, you know, like these people who used to make themselves like drunk. I don't think they were drunk. That they would come on radio and couldn't even talk because they would pretend they're so drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would start to teach people how to kill Tutsis.
Oh, my.
Yeah, openly.
Mm-hmm.
Talking how like we are not the enemies of the country. We are not meant to be in the country. When you kill next time, you have to start with babies. And then they will laugh, like evil laugh. And then people will think, oh, that's a joke. That can never happen. But somehow they educated those who had hatred in their hearts. They told them what to do. They educated them. They kind of, you know, helped them. So I remember the person who was in the country, the head of the army of the UN, he was sending messages to the headquarters asking, telling them that this radio is so bad that they have to stop it. But somehow, I think that everyone took it so easy, like it was never going to materialize.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened around the world, things were getting really hot because of the radio. The hatred was growing so bad. Everything wrong in the country was being praised. I remember a time when I passed through the town coming from school, and I saw thieves in the city stealing clothes from people.
And
I remember them stealing this woman. They removed her shoes. They took her bag, and the police were around there, you know, and they took her gold chain she had on and her clothes. Thank God she had something inside. And nobody said anything. Even us, normal people, they will tell you, don't say a word. Those people, you know, like they can kill you. And I was like, you know, what is going on? This was not here in 3-4 years before. But you felt like something was about to explode in the country. There's no way that the evil can be so praised and so let go doing whatever it wants. And there's no justice anymore. That was just a few months before the whole thing exploded. And then the whole thing really started. I remember on the 6th of April, 1994, and I got to know the news the morning of the 7th of April, when my brother came to me and told me that the president was killed the night before. We have just heard it from the radio. So we couldn't believe it. And I remember getting up out of the bed and telling my brother, look, they are going to kill us. And he couldn't believe how I thought about that. I'm like, he said, why do you think they're going to kill us? I told him, don't you see that what we have been talking on radio, now it is going to materialize. We all listened to that radio. They had such good music to attract people. So we were listening to it, just like to hear the jokes. But something told me, look, it will happen. It will end up happening. And it was just the beginning of the whole thing.
Now, it's very interesting. Just to give a little bit about your character or your personality, even as a young child, you had a special interest. I don't know if you want to reveal it. I'm trying to walk carefully here. I know there's many things in the book that you want people to discover as they read the book. But I thought it was a very interesting item about your youth when you went to visit the priest. Do you want to share that?
Yeah.
I thought it was so cute.
About being a nun?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, I grew up really loving God. But somehow, I loved my father, I loved my mom so much, and they prayed. So somehow I felt like, I don't know, when I remember the transformation during the genocide, I wondered if I really loved God enough before. But then when I was a child, I remember doing things that made me feel like I was really, again, looking for him or close to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when I was about 13 years old, I had a friend called Jeanette. That was her real name in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked so much about the apparition of the Blessed Mother in Fatima because our teacher was telling us about it. And then we were all the time talking about it and said, you know what, maybe we should just become nuns. And she was so excited. She said, yeah, and we will be in the same coven, you know, the same place. We'll stay friends, and God will be so happy to have us.
I thought that was so precious.
Yeah. And then we traveled almost like 8 miles to go to look for the priest to tell him that we are going to be nuns. And I told my dad and my mom. My mom was laughing like, oh, you crazy. And my dad was like, oh, that's a good idea. I think he was laughing at us too. So we got up in the morning. We traveled through the mountains, went through the one river, and we went to the church so far. And we told we made this priest, who was such a nice man. Mm. I can never forget his posture. He had on always this long dress, white, and his rosary on the belt. And then we met him outside. He said, Father, we want to be nuns. He said, you want to be nuns? Are you sure? I said, oh, we are very sure. Have you talked about it with your parents? I said, yeah, and they support us. He was laughing, and then he said, oh, children. He was so happy. I can feel his compassion, and I felt so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he blessed us. He blessed us and the Father and touched our head. So sweet. And he said, when you are 18 years old, come back, and we'll talk about it. Right now, go back and concentrate on your studies.
Well,
it was so disappointed a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, because it's always unique to me when little ones are inspired about
you.
Religion and the spirit. What from your past inspired you to try prayer to survive, or made you feel prayer made a difference?
You know, what is it really? I think I grew up just seeing my parents praying. As soon as I was able to know what is the difference, you know, to remember anything at all, I remember every night we used to kneel down, and we had a cross on one wall. Everyone, my mom, my dad, my three brothers, we would kneel down and pray. And somehow that moment was so sacred that no one would laugh, no one would do a thing. Mm. So my dad would start the prayers all the time as the father of the family. And when we finished, then we go to sleep. But somehow, maybe seeing people around really being the best people. And another thing I think is, we had really a good priest who loved children. So when we, you know, like when we were growing up, the parties, we had games. You know, I think that was all around the church. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe that. But I think it was my parents, of course, because they spoke about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my father, remember when I went to high school, when I finally got the scholarship as somebody of my tribe, as a Tutsi, and they told us, like, I got the scholarship in a government school, which was the best schools. My dad was so happy, and he said, let me tell you something. We had a party that night, and he said, I have said the rosary every night for the past 2 years, just praying for this to happen. And I was like, what? He never told us a word. So besides praying together, he was praying outside every day. That is something he took an hour to pray for me to get that school. It touched me so much. And he said he's going to offer 4 masses to thank God, that he promised God he will do that. And he will do other action of loving to help people if I get that school. So, you know, all those things, I can see how much prayer meant to everything that was happening in my family.
Well, now, what was the metamorphosis, if you will, that you went through in that bathroom with those 7 women? I know that's a lot to ask in a
that's right. Yeah.
Short program like this.
The question again?
What was the process that you went through, the process of change that you went through while you were in that bathroom?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know what? I think there's a time when I started. First of all, the first 2 days, 3 days, I was so tired. I couldn't take it. You know, in life when you think like this can never happen.
Mm.
That's how I was. And I was so tired. I started to feel like I am such a hero, you know, for somebody who have stayed in these 3 days in one place. And then I was talking to myself, I will tell my mom how I spent so many days here. You know, she won't believe it. You know, when you're having those fantasy, I still didn't believe what was going on. My father would be so sad to know what happened to me. As though they were living a better life, you know. So those are the things that you think you would talk news. You would tell people what happened to you, as though it is not happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the end of the week, that spoiled innocence thing was gone. I was mad. I was angry. How can this happen? How can this be the people who were my neighbors? How can people just be so crazy and think that I'm this bad when they loved me? What changed in their lives? Mm-hmm. What changed in their mind? I was mad. I was thinking I would give back. I would never talk to anybody from the other tribe. I would hate them, and I have a good reason. So it was all those things that were going on in my mind, maybe for the second week. And then there came a huge change when they started to tell us that they were killing people in the public places, Tutsis, that they were killing them in stadiums and churches, and they were destroying them. And now they were starting to search for in the houses. And it was a law. It was something coming from the ministers, government ministers, that people who love the country should search every house, even those you trust. They should search them to find if there is any Tutsi hiding. That was the killer. That was something that woke me up and said, oh my God, so I can die. That means they can find us. And I never forgot the day they came. I cannot even describe you the fear when you know that people are coming inside the house, they are 5 inches away from you, and they can find you. In that instant, I thought that, look, the pain and the fear is so much. What can I do? What can really save me here? You realize that you don't have your parents anymore around you to protect you, and you thought they were all for you. You don't have even the pastor who was hiding us. He could not even tell people that he has us, or he could not even give them money, at least to keep us alive. He had to tell them that he can never hide any Tutsi. He took a huge chance. And then they were coming inside the house, and they were searching, and I told myself, I have to grab God. The only thing that is real here is God, that can hear me where I was.
Very good. Can you hold that thought for me while we go to break? I'm sorry that it had to come at this moment. But again, people, I want you to remember this is about hope and upliftment and overcoming adversity. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. And I want you to stay tuned for the rest of our interview with Imakili Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, about her journey before, during, and after hiding with 7 women in a small bathroom for 91 days in Rwanda. Don't passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments. Listen to me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8 for Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom. I am a local natural healthcare practitioner and psychologist. I will show you alternative paths toward health with an holistic approach. Don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8, only on AM 860 WWDB.
Why should you passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments? It's time to take charge of your life with preventive measures. Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies at 610-660-7710 for an initial consultation. Alternative Medicine Therapies offers a holistic approach to preventive care, unlike conventional medicine that tries to correct the illness that exists instead of preventing it altogether. Don't let anyone tell you that your situation is hopeless. Alternative medicine therapies like iridology, kinesiology, reflexology, energy medicine, which includes Qi Li therapy, acupressure, and psychological consultations has an amazing track record of positive results. Why suffer when alternative medicine therapies with psychologist Parthenia Izzard is here to help? Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies today for an initial consultation at 610-660-7710 and visit their website at www.amtherapies.com. And don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izzard's radio program each Saturday morning at 8 on AM 860 WWDB.
Welcome back. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. Remember, next week our guest will be Benjamin Harrison from Rishi Tees. Today we're talking with Imakili Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, about her survival of the Rwandan genocide. Imakili, you have such a soothing, calming voice. It's almost mesmerizing as I listen to you. It takes an effort for me to even realize this is an interview that's going to end at some point. And, I just get so focused with what you're saying.
Thank you.
Please continue. You were talking about at that moment you realized that really all you had to, you know, embrace was God.
That's right, yeah. So you realize that there's nobody else who can help you there, who you can talk to. And you need somebody. You need protection. You need to express what you are feeling. So I told myself, it's only God. The God as I remember him, as they told us who he is. He listened from you, from your heart. He reads everything that is going on. And then I remember they said, he's capable to do anything. And somehow I have the desire to live. I didn't want to die in that fear. I remember asking God, please help me not to die like that. Don't let them find me. And somehow, when you reach in this moment where you want to really trust, there is that voice that tells you, who do you think you are? Maybe he doesn't even exist. And I was like, God, I have to exist, you know? And I said, oh my, please help me. And I remember I said, if you exist, please do a miracle that these people will not find us here in the bathroom. tell you the truth, they searched and searched for 2 hours, one tiny house, every single place you can imagine, under the beds, suitcases, to see if there's any baby hiding. And they reached right the door of that bathroom, and they told the pastor that they trust him, that he would not hide any Tutsi. That was something like, oh my gosh, you are here, you are listening. And then from that moment, when I see they didn't find us, I grabbed his hand. I was always talking to myself, I have to remember him. Who is he exactly? And I remember I asked the pastor to give me the Bible, which I didn't read before that much. But from that moment on, I started to read the Bible exactly just to know again, who is God exactly, in my own words, in my own understanding, who is he? And I was trying to understand what he have done in the past. I thought about this man we talk in the Bible, Daniel, in the den of lions. I told myself, even if they find me, they will not catch me. They will lose strength. They will not see me. You know, I was so sure that if God have done it to another human being, he will do it to me. And of course, I had so many discouragement, something telling me, oh, Daniel was a saint. You are nothing. You are a sinner. And I'm like, but God can forgive me if I have done anything. And I will go on my knees, God forgive me for anything at all, so that at least I can benefit your favor here, because I need you more than anything. And another transformation happened when the pastor told us that they will be searching any time, because we thought that we have escaped that first time, and maybe it will never happen again. So maybe that we just have to deal by staying in that bathroom, but not being searched and not facing that fear that burns you like you are dying so slowly. So he told us that they will be coming almost every day. And from that moment, just to wait for them was like dying slowly. In the Catholic, they tell us about purgatory, how the purgatory, you know, where you purify before you go to heaven, that, you know, you feel like it is, you know, it pains a lot. And I always had a question like, how can my spirit pain if nobody's beating my body? If I'm dead, how can my spirit pain really? But that time I was like, this is purgatory. I am dying slowly, and no one is touching me, just waiting for the killers to come. It was killing me slowly. So we waited for them, and I told myself, I'm going to pray every second of my time here. I will pray so that these voices that is telling me how things are going to be so bad, maybe they will shut down, so I can just say the words in the prayer. And I say the rosary. As a Catholic, again, I use the prayer of the rosary, and I use the Bible to read the Bible. I mean, like, I never left even 1 minute without praying. I prayed from 6 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night when I fell asleep. And during that praying, which was so interesting, during the praying and trying to be sincere to God, every word I said, for example, just the prayer of Our Lord is prayer, when you say, Our Father who art in heaven, I wanted to mean every word. Our Father means everybody's Father. And I could not bring myself to believe that even the killers were God's children. That means he is the Father of everybody. I struggled with that. I don't want to believe that. They cannot be your children. I can't even love them, because every prayer is about love. Every single prayer is about love, about forgiving. And then when you meditate about the life of Jesus, me at least, who believe him as my God, you see him, he was rejected. You know, because the rosary, you really go through how he was born, he came into the world, how he was rejected by people. He was crowned with the thorns on his head, how he carried the cross, and when he died and said, forgive them, Father, they don't know what they do. And that was something I was doing all throughout the day. And I could not escape those words, because they were there in the rosary. It is a set up prayers you have to go through and try to mean it. And every time I reached those places, I was like, no, I don't want to forgive them. Of course I can't. They might be killing my mom, my dad. I cannot forgive them. But as I'm saying those words and I'm praying God to save me, I couldn't escape the meaning of those words. And later I got to understand, look, those people are killing me. There is no way they can understand what they are doing. Exactly that what Jesus meant. He said, forgive them, they don't know what they do. Father, forgive them. There is no way those people can know the pain they were causing me, the pain they were causing to the children I will have if I live to live, if I live. So I understood that, really, when you see people doing wrong to us, the best thing to do is to try to pray for them so that they can be good, because I believe everyone can change. It happened to all of us. Sometimes, you know, we do something and another minute we'll say, how can I do that? We will apologize or we will even regret what we have done. So I was walking and actually holding to that these people are God's children. God loves them, but he is in pain also that his children are walking away from him, are doing so bad. But for me to be a good child of God, I have to pray for them. And to me, it makes sense, even in the world. When people do wrong, which we all do, what do you want really if you want the world to be in peace? Is it to hate them and just like kill them? Or is it to pray for them so that they can change? So it gave me so much peace. From the time I was angry and I was praying, fighting that I don't want to forgive, I don't want even to pray for them or to think of them as human beings, until that moment when I let go and I knew that I will protect myself, of course, from people who do wrong, because that evil can still be there in them. But I will pray for them and I will love them in my life. So it was a huge step to realize that everybody who do wrong, even them, are God's children and he loves them just as he loves me.
So it's not like you're saying what they did was okay, because a lot of people think when you forgive somebody, you're saying what you did was okay.
Oh, no.
And it's not like that at all.
At all. And even justice have to go on. If you really care about forgiveness, you just realize that it is that anger, that bitterness that is eating you. You just let go. That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. When I was able to think of them like that, I just felt like, look, I am dealing with somebody who is sick. Somebody who is in a situation, in a state, he has not been able to understand the truth. And for me, it's just like I said, I let go so much anger, and my prayer was reaching God so much easy. I felt like I can command anything, it will happen. Because I knew somehow you just get this truth that this is what is going on in these people. And the same evil can still be there with them, even when you forgive them. So you still have to protect yourself. You should not make you victim of somebody who is doing evil. Evil is very strong. I mean, look what happened to Rwanda, killing a million of people. And now, some people have killed. When you approach them, they can't even believe they did it. Some of them are crying for what they have done. And others who are still held in that evil way, they feel that if they come out of the prison, they will finish the job and kill even the remaining Tutsi.
Mm.
Even for them, I forgive them because I know they don't know what they do. And I will pray for them. I hope one day they will wake up and say, what the heck did I do to my brother? But that helps me to let go the anger. And that helps me to leave a room in my heart so that if ever they change, God will inspire me to know that they have really changed and I can be able to embrace them again.
Oh, wonderful thought. Wonderful place for us to pause. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izard. Our program is sponsored by Alternative Medicine Therapies. My main office is in the Tubala Plaza Building, Suite 300 in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. Visit our website at www.amtherapies.com or call the office for appointments at 610-687-6184. Stay tuned for our return with Imakili Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, as she talks about her experience in Rwanda.
Why should you passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments? It's time to take charge of your life with preventive measures. Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies at 610-660-7710 for an initial consultation. Alternative Medicine Therapies offers a holistic approach to preventive care, unlike conventional medicine that tries to correct the illness that exists instead of preventing it altogether. Don't let anyone tell you that your situation is hopeless. Alternative Medicine Therapies like Iridology, Kinesiology, Reflexology, Energy Medicine, which includes Qi Light Therapy, acupressure, and psychological consultations has an amazing track record of positive results. Why suffer when alternative medicine therapies with psychologist Parthenia Izzard is here to help? Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies today for an initial consultation at 610-660-7710 and visit their website at www.amtherapies.com. And don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izzard's radio program each Saturday morning at 8 on AM 860 WWDB.
Don't passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments. Listen to me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8 for Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom. I am a local natural healthcare practitioner and psychologist. I will show you alternative paths toward health with an holistic approach. Don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, Parthenia Izzard, every Saturday morning at 8, only on AM 860 WWDB. You're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. Today we're talking with Immaculée Ilibagiza, author of Left to Tell, as she talks to us about how to handle events, major negative events in our lives. Your book can fall in many categories, religion, history, self-help, autobiography. Do they all resonate for you, or does one stand out more than the others as the category, major category for your book?
Good question. You know, wow, I think I had really a good desire to kind of give, for example, my children, like the past of my family, how they grew up, because they will never know them. So somehow I wanted to let them know the value of their grandparents, you know, who they were. So that's why I put so much about my family, how we grew up. And just to tell the world again, you know, these are the people who raised me and who ended up in that bad experience. But what was really the core message I had and really gave me the motivation to write was more about to tell people that how God can be so present in each one's life, you know, even in the darkest hour. I was really shocked. I never expected that. I know sometimes we pray when we're in trouble, but never expected that he would be so close and that we'd almost like make him my friend, my best friend, and we'd be talking. And another thing, when I came out of the bathroom, just to see that everything was done, nothing I had at all. And here again, there is God who is taking you by hand, step by step. And like so many dreams I have had, I had dreams about Jesus saying to me that, continue to trust me, you will never miss a thing. I will be there, I will give you what your parents would have given you even more. So I told myself, you know, okay, it is a dream, but I will see. But when I see how things happen on time, and that's what I try to explain, I tell my goodness, I want to tell everybody who is looking for something, not to be frustrated because somebody couldn't make it happen, not to be angry with anybody, just please hold on to God inside you. Be at peace. Just try to forgive. Try to be at peace with your heart, and everything is possible. I couldn't believe that anyone can go in any situation and it can come out okay. I have seen friends who have been in depression, sometimes because of their boyfriend left them. And sometimes we talk, I'm like, hey, remember what happened to me? Remember what happened to so many people? And this is how God did it. And they would just like turn from being so angry and being so depressed, and they would start to laugh. You know, so I realized that this works. It really works to have hope, and you can have hope in any situation.
Well, that takes me ahead of myself, because I always ask my guests what words of wisdom would they like to leave our audience with, and my goodness, that was quite a good thing to leave them with. However, I'm not finished with you, because I never got to mention your documentary. You have a documentary coming up?
That's right. Actually, right now I'm in Canada Festival. They're honoring the documentary. The name of it is The Diary of Immaculée. It was such, another to me, God's hand. You know, I've been asking, writing him letters, to help me to tell my story because I didn't know where to start.
Now, is there a website that people can go to find out more about your foundation, about the orphanage that you're starting in Rwanda?
That's right.
All of these things.
Yeah, you can find it on www.lefttotell.com.
Okay. www, folks that were running to get a pen and pencil, lefttotell.com. Please go there, find out about the documentary, about the wonderful foundation, as well as the orphanage that Immaculée wants to. Or have you already started the orphanage?
Yeah, we have started already in Rwanda.
That's wonderful. This is primarily for the youngsters left behind after the genocide.
Yeah, especially. Yeah, and we have so many from AIDS also. Mm-hmm. So you want just to give a chance to children to go to school and then help themselves after. But when you don't have even the basis, you know, to go to school, high school, university, you are just lost without any parent advising you or giving you, the little thing to start with.
Well, I want to tell you again that I thank you so much for sharing your time, sharing your story, and sharing your wisdom with us this morning. I think you have inspired many people to handle their situations in a more positive way. And I hope at some point in the future you'll grace us with your presence again.
Oh, I would and, love to. Thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you, too.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And you be well, okay?
Okay, you too.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's after an interview like that, it's very difficult for me to transition to the herb of the day and the yoga asana of the day, but I do have to do that, and bear with me as I make that transition. Today's herb is boneset. The part used medicinally, parts used medicinally, are its flower petals and leaves. Some of the phytochemicals include astragalin, gallic acid, eupholitan, gallic acid, rutin, and tannic acid. It acts as a decongestant, laxative, anti-inflammatory, and diuretic, and of course this is according to Balk and Balk. Loosens phlegm, reduces fever, increases perspiration. It's also not to be used for long term because you want to avoid any toxicity. Parigasana. Well, first I want to make sure I tell you about our guest next week. Next week, we're going to have Benjamin Harrison from Rishi Teas. They make organic loose teas with an endless variety. For example, I think I purchased myself 11 different green teas that they had. And next week, our herb will be Boraj and the Asana Virasana. Parigasana. This asana, according to Dr. Shah, is excellent for strengthening all muscles and joints of the upper and lower extremities, tones up the paravertebral muscles and spine, massages abdominal and pelvic organs, tones the adrenals, extends and expands size of the chest and lungs, reduces fat around the waist, thighs, and calves. Indications would be low and mid back aches, gastrointestinal disorders of the stomach, liver, spleen, and intestines, diabetes, asthma, sexual disorders, obesity around the waist, thighs, and calves, weakness of the legs. Please check out our website for details about our upcoming programs. We want to invite you to intern for the program, send current events items and morsels of wisdom from young people about or anything related to wellness, wholeness, and wisdom. You can email your articles or recordings to consult@amtherapies.com or mail CDs to the office at Tubala Plaza, Suite 300 in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania, 19004. We offer iridology and kinesiology assessments, consultations in nutrition, meditation, acupressure, psychosocial consultations. Visit our website and subscribe to our newsletter. Download our radio program. Participate on our blog. Find out who our future guests will be and what we are all about. Wellness, wholeness, and wisdom. Be well.
AM 860 is WWDB Philadelphia, the Delaware Valley's only money talk radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Stewart. Everything's looking pretty good for NASA to make its fifth attempt to get Atlantis off the ground at 11:15 a.m. Eastern this morning. Fox News Radio's Holly Hickman has more with this live update from Florida. Good morning.
Morning, Karen. So far, it looks like this one might take. NASA says no technical issues today. Yesterday's fuel sensor problem did not crop up again this morning. And in less than 10 minutes, the Atlantis hatch will be closed and latched for launch. The astronauts woke up just before midnight, had breakfast 2 hours later, and are suited up and strapping in on that shuttle. As long as the weather holds up, they should be taking off in about 2 hours. Karen?
All right. Fox News Radio's Holly Hickman with a live report from Florida. The launch delay has cost NASA so far $616,000.
He knew he had had the course. It's that simple. You got a helicopter hovering over your head. You got SWAT team members coming down the wood line. The game was up and he knew it.
New York State Police Superintendent Wayne Bennett there speaking at a news conference after the arrest of suspected cop killer Ralph Bucky Phillips. Phillips surrendered last night after months on the run. SWAT teams and canine officers tracked him down yesterday.